Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 588, The Maltese Falcon 2, The Black Bird.
Electric Boogaloo. With,
there's some things that just, you feel dirty for saying, like The Maltese Falcon 2, like that's one of them.
No, you should, yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
Rosemary's Baby 2 is just about up there.
Yeah.
This was not as bad.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're judging the two, this is not as bad.
If you're going to compare, I might say you're accurate, but in the scheme of things.
Oh, no, totally. Overall, terrible movie.
I still wish I didn't know this movie existed.
You're welcome. So let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And I forgot last time to rattle off the League of Show Sharers, so we will do that here. People who were kind enough to share the episode last week, Brad Hyen, Chris Valls, Lane LeVanway, Travis Tewitt, Glenn Cougar Mellenbrewer, Griffin Fox Smith, Julianne Jordan, Ron Johnson, Gabriel Lugo, Ralph Tribble, Chris Sanders, Chris Williams, Carl Clarkson, and Chris Magic Man. So thank you very much. And of course,
and a very happy birthday to Brad Hyen.
Never heard of him.
No, he's
true. Okay.
Is he a show share? I don't know who that is.
Carry on.
Should we know who that is?
And also don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers. $5 a month, all sorts of bonus content, and you help out, and we like you just a little bit more. So there's all that. I believe before we get into the movie, Joe wanted to talk about Michael Keaton.
I mean, he's coming back as Batman.
Mr. Mom, too.
This is...
Mr. Grandmom.
Mr. Grandpa. Yeah. Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. I am shocked.
DC is trying everything they possibly can to write their universe.
This makes sense, though. Like, out of everything they've done... You've got the if you want to reset, you know, the advantage that the DC has is they embrace their multiverse. I know Spider-Verse, the whole thing, but their movies don't talk about alternate realities. Well, they're going to.
But that's a new this is a brand new development. The only reason DC's embracing their multiverse is because they screwed up big
time. That's not completely true.
What other movies embrace the multiverse before they just started doing this stuff?
Ezra Miller's Flash shows up on the Flash TV show.
Which, tell me when that aired. What date did that air?
That's like 6 months ago.
The Crisis, whatever the
like
Crisis
3
was.
Months ago? That's what I'm saying. They just
started doing it.
That is a brand new thing to course correct their terrible attempt at a cinematic universe. That's all I'm saying. It's not like DC's been embracing that Michael Keaton's Batman showed up in Batman Forever because he was a part of a different universe. Like, no, this is a brand new development.
Yes. But it does make sense, though, right? Like, if that's...
Sure, in a good movie. Hopefully it's good.
And we'll wait and see. I mean, they've got all kinds of time to get it right at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you know? Keaton's Batman, I think. I mean, we grew up with him. If you go on Patreon, there's a Batman 89 episode, so you can go check that out as one of the bonus features. he's the definitive Batman to me. I love Keaton as Batman. I think his Batman is one of the most intimidating next to Affleck's. I think Affleck, mm-hmm. because of his size, the way he carried himself, I do think he is probably the scariest. Like, if you saw Affleck's Batman,
he's the most comic accurate Batman.
But you'd crap your pants if someone the size of Affleck in a bat yeah. suit, you know. But other than that, like, that first scene where you see Batman in Batman 89 is mm-hmm. terrifying. And so, but Michael Keaton, to me, that's the definitive Batman. And if you're telling me you're going to bring him back as old man Bruce, fine. Like, that's great. But they have to get this thing on track, because they've yeah. screwed up their universe so much. And, you know, they're going to reboot this. They're not going to reboot. They're going to do the Suicide
Squad. This isn't part
of
the universe. This is going to be part of this universe.
So,
Batman's going to be his own thing.
Let's get it on course. What they need to do here 20 years later, I don't know, whatever, 7 years later, what they need to do is they need to start like Marvel did. They need to clean the slate and do single movies, you know,
yep.
Aquaman 2, Shazam 2, get them back on track. Man of Steel 2 maybe might happen someday.
He's back.
Get your movies on the right track, right? Make good movies. And then when you have good movies that everybody loves, then pull them together for your Justice League.
Right. It's almost like they had a plan the whole time.
It's almost
and
like
them
they...
being Marvel.
Yeah.
Here's what I would do. He's your Nick Fury.
Oh, yeah. Old man Bruce is calling
Old man
together.
Bruce is
yeah.
your Nick Fury, bringing people together. Mm-hmm. And you can have Terry McGinnis as your mm-hmm. Bat character. You could have Barbara Gordon, or you can have Dick Grayson. Like, yeah. you have three options to have, like, your Bat character, where Bruce, old man Bruce, is your Nick Fury, working behind the scenes, putting things together.
I'm a Wayne is Batman guy, but if you're telling me you're going to get Michael Keaton as Batman, I'll take Terry McGinnis all day long. If
yeah.
we can have both of them, we can have Bruce Wayne, Keaton,
I think it needs to be Barbara Gordon.
Both of them, right?
I mean, like, a young Barbara Gordon.
Yeah.
If they're
like
gonna
Bruce is training Barbara.
If they're gonna bring back Michael Keaton, they should just make The Dark Knight. Everything else
totally.
Is a waste of time. And
yeah.
I hope this movie's good. But all I can think about when everybody's all excited about Michael Keaton returning to the role of Batman is Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the
Crystal
Skull.
Oh man,
we were all excited about that too.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's what I was saying at the beginning. It has to be good. It's not enough to cast Keaton as Batman on paper. That sounds cool, but it's got to be the right movie. And so I really hope they course correct this soon, or else they've got to, like, they're trying their best not to reboot this for whatever reason, right? Like, they're trying to stick with this because they've got Shazam.
So, but
if they're doing
Flashpoint, that's a reboot.
But it's not. That's a soft reboot.
That's fair. That's
what
fair.
I'm saying is that they should have cleaned house when they got Pattinson's Batman. That's a new, you know, a new set of movies. Like,
right.
work him in, but then they'd have to get rid of Aquaman and Wonder Woman. So they're doing their damnedest to do this multiverse thing, so you can keep the ones that worked and get rid of the ones that don't. And that's fine, but it has to be good. If this ends up sucking, they need to just scrap it and start over and have Pattinson's be the first one, and then when you make some good Batman movies, make some good Superman movies, then give us the Justice League like we got Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You got to introduce all those characters singly.
Yeah.
Singly? Yeah, it works. And then you can, you know, I mean, that's what they did.
Individually, I believe.
Individually, that's a much better word, yes. But if you want to do The Dark Knight, cast John Hamm.
Yeah, the thing
that's your Superman in The Dark Knight.
He's too young.
I don't...
No! That's the whole... Superman's supposed to be young. He always looks young.
He had gray hair in Dark Knight, didn't he?
Nope.
He doesn't age quite the same.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
remember that scene, Tom, where he's where like the he's wearing like the riding pants and the like the button down shirt that's some reason unbuttoned all the way to his navel, like with the eagle on his arm. He looks exactly the same because he doesn't age.
Yeah, Kingdom Come, he's old, but
yeah,
Kingdom Come, he has the gray.
Okay,
hair.
I thought he was still looking old. I mean, I know that he's not going to age the same way as a person, but okay, it's been a while since.
God,
I read
you know,
it.
I'd buy that though. Give us the Dark Knight, and I mean,
they did once.
Give us a live action Dark Knight Returns. Keaton is old man Bruce.
Despite what Snyder said, he tried to make his version of the Dark Knight Returns. I mean, it's all in BVS.
Well,
down to the suit and the final fight and the way the final fight goes, the armored suit, the same.
Batman, but it's not that same. It's not old man Bruce though.
No, that's true.
That's what I'm saying. Make a live version of that, and I think that would really work. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I love DC. I'm a Batman guy. I'm excited for the Pattinson and stuff, but I'm really not excited about continuing this universe yet. This is their last attempt. If they screw this up and they don't reboot it properly, this soft reboot, then they got to just scrap this thing because it's not working. You know, Nolan's Batman was really good, and they never did the whole tried to milk it for all the Justice League and all this stuff. Matt Reeves is great. I'm thinking the Batman's going to be really good, and this is their chance to get a really good auteur to make a Batman movie. And maybe, of course, they're going to do this with the intention of setting it up for the universe. And I think you just have to use the Pattinson Batman as the reboot, use that as the groundwork, kind of like Iron Man, right? Pattinson Batman's Iron Man, and then build on that.
But doesn't look like that's going to be the case. That's going to Joker's by itself, which I guess we're getting a second one of those. For whatever reason. Talk about misbegotten sequels.
Well, I don't know.
And then Pattinson's Batman's going to be by itself. Like, it's just, there's no continuity. I get wanting to do, we talked about this very early on, is like, you can get to the Elseworlds, but you got to earn it. And they have done nothing to earn the Elseworld stories yet.
Well, we'll have to see. Speaking of Nolan, unsurprisingly, Tenet, that was just delayed 2 weeks in July, is now moved to August.
What do they think?
Surprise!
We just had Florida just had a record-setting 9,000 new cases.
Yeah, New York is basically shut down. California is mandating masks being worn. Florida has over 9,000 positive cases in a day. Like, what are they doing trying to open theaters? Stop putting dates on it and say to be decided. I have a theory on this, and this is really frustrating. So theaters are in jeopardy, right? Like, theaters may never open again. AMC, the biggest theater chain, they're double the number two theater chain. Regal's number two. AMC has double the theaters. They may go out of business. So theaters are scared to death. And of course, it's really bad for all the people that own them and work at them, all that stuff. So if Tenet is going to come out in theaters, if WB is going to go to the only in theaters route for that, for Wonder Woman, what do they need, Joe?
People to go?
No, before that.
Oh, they need theaters.
They need theaters, right?
Yeah.
And so what's really frustrating is that I think WB is stringing everyone along so that theaters open back up and they have a place to show it. They're putting everybody at jeopardy. They're exposing them all to coronavirus. They're doing all this crap. And then they're just going to keep pushing the date back, because if they were like, oh, we don't know when it will open up, theaters would be like, well, what are we going to show, right? So all these theaters have now been bait and switched. They've all said, oh, well, we got to get open for Tenet, so we'll start playing Jurassic Park and we'll start playing some Disney stuff. Like, they're
did they re-release Empire?
I heard Disney was making a lot of stuff available for theatrical licensing.
Okay.
But the point is, like, they were only doing that to ramp up for Tenet and for eventually Mulan a couple weeks later. But they're pushing it, and I think they know they're pushing it. They're dragging it as long as they can, and they're pushing it 2 weeks at a time, but it's not going to happen. And I think it's really frustrating, because now theaters, especially for independent chains, they're opening back up.
Sure.
They're hiring staff. They're having to pay for all these supplies. They're paying all this insurance and, you know,
all new renovations, too.
All that stuff, right? And then they're going to open up with nothing to show, and then they're going to lose more money. They're going to close again. And I think it's really, I just think it's really wrong of WB to string people along like this. Things are not good enough to open 2 weeks later. I would put money on it that this date that they set in August for Tenet, it's not going to happen. Get real. It's not happening.
No.
They're going to push it again. No. So mark my words and see what happens to all these theaters that opened up to show Jurassic Park and Back to the Future. There's only so many of those classic movies, but the majority of audiences, like me included, are going to go, I can watch that at home. I'm not going to expose my family to coronavirus to watch a movie I can watch at home.
It's insane. It's insane to me that people are just like, no, I'm going to the theater. Like, I just want to be like, you obviously have not lived through this.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a joke. Like, this is not, it just because you want to go to the theater, the bottom line is your, I mean, the chances of you getting COVID, like, you're going, if you're out in public without a mask, sitting in these seats that I guarantee you are not sanitized the right way. There's no way. Are you going to tell me this 17-year-old kid is going to sanitize the seat the right way? I know the video of the guy spraying it with like a bug sprayer from the 1950s.
No, that's not what they're spraying them with. Those are desanitized. Those are sanitation foggers. Like, that's a real thing. But
yeah.
But I still...
No, I know. But I'm saying, like...
But it's... it's just... It's not worth it. Like, and I think anybody that's going is someone that hasn't been affected directly. Until they are, they refuse to believe that it could happen to them, you know?
Right. As soon as you have a family member that gets it, and especially, and God forbid, one of them that dies, you're not going to believe it, and then you are, and then what are you going to say? What's your excuse going to be? You know, like, everyone told you. And is it worth going to see, you know, Forrest Gump on the big screen that you could watch at home when, you know, to expose everyone? It's just, it's asinine. So I'm very frustrated.
Could you do an IMAX screening in a drive-in? Is that even possible? Like, the size of an IMAX screen, could you do, like, every time, all these pictures I'm seeing of drive-ins are, like, smaller screens?
Well, yeah, because they're older. They, all those drive-ins were built before the advent of that, so you'd have to literally install an entirely new system. Plus, part of IMAX is about the sound, too, right? It's not just the...
Right, that's true, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I'm just wondering, like, I was thinking you could, I mean, if you want to, if you had some money to burn, some, you know, rich person... And you wanted to make like a massive drive-in screen. I was like, that'd be kind of cool. Like, I was thinking the other day, I was like, that'd be kind of cool to see Tenet or something like that on a massive screen outside.
Yeah, they had the right idea with drive-ins. I think that's really smart. I think that it's a business that can pop up, and maybe even these theaters, I mean, if they're able to, they can invest in somehow either hiring someone or putting together a drive-in type thing. They can even use their parking lots and set up a temporary screen or something. I think drive-in's the way to go because you're all isolated to your vehicle. But this idea of opening theaters up with nothing to show, now Mulan is at the end of August, Tenet's at the middle of August, so we're at the end of June here. That's a month and a half. What on earth are theaters going to be doing to stay in business? Like, they're not going to get enough people to the theater watching old movies to make that profitable. There's no way.
No way.
So it's silly. So anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll continue to monitor the situation. But I think it's really irresponsible. And just on to put this, I want to address something with Nolan that I saw on Twitter. Someone did a thread, and I don't think it got that much attention, but they were kind of bagging on Nolan, and I can't say that I disagree. Nolan's a great filmmaker, obviously. He's an amazing director. His films are great. But it's really irresponsible of him to be pushing this "you have to see it in theaters" thing, and I'm going to save theaters, and I'm going to get you back to theaters, because you're putting a movie above human lives. Like, he's endangering every worker at the theater, every patron of the theater. And I think it's really crappy of him to like be pushing so hard for this when the dude could just do what freaking Vin Diesel does, you know, credit where credit's due. Fast and Furious said, "Oh, we're going to delay it a year."
Right.
And then we don't have to think about it. We don't have to hear about it again. And Christopher Nolan is doing this. "Oh, it's going to be in theaters, only in theaters," and drags it on. It's crappy, man, and I don't agree with it.
I get that he wants his picture to be seen in the theater, but the reality of the situation is it still probably won't be, even if they do release it in 2 weeks, because most people are going to take a pass.
Yeah, at what cost, right?
Yeah,
yeah. What's the point?
I guess let's circle back to the film of the week. We killed enough time because there ain't a lot to talk about with the Black Bird.
No.
So, when we're picking these sequels, I don't want to make it sound like
I said we should do Psycho and Psycho 2.
And we will, but we just did a horror movie. So, like, I think we'll get to those at some point. But I just didn't want to do horror movies.
We did
like
Gremlins as well. We've been in the horror arena a little bit. Yeah.
But I look for something that has real connective tissue. Like, I wouldn't want to do, like, there's like a War Games sequel, but it has nothing to do with the original, right? Like, it has none of the actors, none of the writers. I don't even know if it has any of the same characters, you know? And so
I think we should do the Computer Wore Tennis Shoes trilogy. I just watched all those on Disney Plus with a young Kurt Russell, and it is hilarious to see him in that role. Like, oh, it's funny. But Cesar Romero's in those movies, and I love Cesar Romero, so that was a hoot.
So this movie you've probably never heard of. It's called The Blackbird. It's from 1975, but it follows Sam Spade Jr. And God. you get two
Ooh-wee.
You get Ooh-wee. two of the actors reprising their roles from the original Maltese Falcon. So you get Lee Patrick, who played Sam Spade's secretary, and you get Elijah Cook, who played Wilmer, and so like there is some real connection to the original film here. So I felt
and that's about it. You just listed it.
Yeah, that is about it. So this movie is so bad. It's never been not only is it not available anywhere on streaming legally, it's never even been released on DVD.
No, this is a movie where if you want to watch it, you have to watch a VHS rip.
Which
is what we did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And so if you want to watch this movie or watch at least enough of it to get the feel for what we're talking about, it is available on YouTube. My guess is it will never be taken down because nobody cares.
Knows it exists.
There's not one person.
That YouTube link I noticed, it's like it's in Spanish, but the movie is in English, so don't let that throw you off.
Yes. Yeah, because when I was selecting this, I steered away from this movie for a little bit because I didn't click through on the link. I just assumed it was in Spanish because so many of these movies that end up as bootlegs on YouTube are in a foreign language. So there's a splash. Oh,
we've been lucky enough that both of the ones that we had to watch were in English.
You're welcome.
Hooray.
But like there's a sequel to Splash called Splash 2, and it's on YouTube, but it's entirely dubbed into French. I have no idea why. So
so weird.
It's an English movie, but it's dubbed in French.
Yeah, it was made by ABC for like I think it was part of the Wonderful World of Disney in like the mid-80s. So
so someone uploaded the dub from France.
Yeah, I have no idea.
So if you want to watch this movie, which you don't, it's on VHS and YouTube, and just listen to this episode.
Yeah, we'll take care of it for you.
Some background on this movie. A producer by the name of Ray Stark at this point in time had the rights to the Maltese Falcon. I'm not entirely sure how that works because you would think Warner Brothers would have had the rights to the Maltese Falcon. I don't understand how they fall into the hands of somebody else.
I don't know. That was maybe he's got like a producing credit. I mean, John Peters had the rights to Superman for a long time.
Yeah.
And like Warner Brothers couldn't make a movie without John Peters okaying it.
And this Ray Stark guy was really good friends with John Huston. So maybe somehow John Huston had him and he sold him to Ray Stark for a little while. But Ray Stark is a legit producer. Like, I mean, he worked on West Side Story and The Goodbye Girl, Annie, Steel Magnolias, Night of the Iguana, Funny Girl. He made 11 movies in conjunction with Neil Simon. So this dude's the real deal. And he hired David Giler to write the screenplay, who you might know from Alien, right? And
I think Don Mankiewicz was in here too, and he was a script doctor on Superman.
Okay.
He worked with Richard Donner.
He did the
punch ups on Superman.
So I guess he was originally going to work on this together with I don't know if I'm saying this right, John Milius, was the screenwriter for Apocalypse Now and worked on the first two Dirty Harry movies. So like,
give me that movie.
That movie sounds like it could have been amazing, but for whatever reason, they did not gel, and so then Giler decided to turn the project into a comedy, and that's how we got what we got.
I have to ask you guys, has any other film sequel completely changed the genre of movie like this one does? I can't remember another movie that's this jarring of a transition.
No.
Well, I will say Gremlins 2 is a pretty radical shift.
Oh, that's true.
But it's still way more in the same.
It's closer to the same vein. I grant you, but it is a shift, you know.
But this movie does something different, though. It doesn't only go from film noir to comedy; it goes from film noir to satire. I usually
say, you think this is satire?
I was like, is this satire?
Straight yuck yucks.
I just
well, I'm just saying, like, this movie is almost like, it's so bad it almost seems like it's making fun. I don't know, maybe it didn't try, but it's so terrible. Like, when I think satire, I think of movies like the Zucker Abrams movies, all those, you know, the Police Academy, that kind of stuff, because the jokes in this movie are more in that vein. Like, there's stuff that makes no sense, that don't tonally fit with the movie they're making, but they're like just interjected there for the weird joke. I don't know. Yeah. It's really strange.
It's strange. Yep. That's a good way to put it. It's a mess.
Yeah. You know,
don't get me wrong, there are some funny, like, I found myself laughing at some of the jokes, but oh man, it is, this is a bonkers movie. I don't even...
The only positive in this movie, and it's a horrible movie and a horrible script, but George Segal plays the main character, and he's the grandpa in The Goldbergs.
Oh, he's also the dad from Just Shoot Me.
Yeah, I mean, he's great, and it's really fun to see him. He was also in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, one of the great films of all time. He's like the other couple that comes, right, to dinner.
Yeah, he's the student couple that gets subjected to all their craziness. You know, speaking of movies, sequels that switch genres, and it's not as radical of a shift, but Alien goes from a horror movie to a straight-up action movie.
That's a good point. Terminator 2?
Yeah. And then First Blood to Rambo. First Blood is honestly kind of a dramatic think piece about Vietnam vets, and then First Blood is just, or Rambo is just, again, an out and out action movie. Yeah,
but so why does it doesn't feel the same though? The film noir to comedy doesn't feel the same as Rambo, which had shooting and action in it, but it was more trying to say something to straight up action. But like,
no, this shift is bad.
This movie, I mean, like, the Maltese Falcon is a serious movie. It's a
right.
It's a great film. It's a classic, and it's a film noir, and it's a detective story. This movie is bad comedy.
I feel like they must have gotten fairly deep into a pass on this movie as a more legitimate sequel to the Maltese Falcon, because there are some scenes, that scene with Wilmer, if the actors
in the club,
yeah, in the club, if that scene had been played as a hard-boiled detective scene without changing a line of dialogue, I think it would work. I think it would fit into a movie like The Maltese Falcon. But instead, because they know at this point they're making a comedy, their performances are different, and so it plays it more for laughs. Kind of going back to what we said in the last episode about how there's comedy in The Maltese Falcon, but they don't really play it for laughs.
Right.
That scene with Wilmer, I really feel like you could reshoot that scene and not play it for laughs, and it would work.
Yeah.
Because Segal has some pretty good Bogart-esque lines, except he does them as yuck-yucks instead of as witty repartee. You know what I'm saying?
So true. So when you approach this movie and you look at the cover, let's talk about the differences. So
it's so different.
The cover of The Maltese Falcon looks like the Casablanca poster. It's one of those classic posters,
sure,
beautifully drawn, laid out. It says The Maltese Falcon. You go over to the cover of The Black Bird, and it is like a comedy. It looks like Police Academy or Rat
Race.
It
looks like the Muppets movie. It looks like the Muppets.
It is classic 70s wacky comedy. Like, this is every movie that, like, silly comedy that I saw advertised as a child. I mean, this is what the poster for The $1 Billion Hobo looked like.
Yeah.
I mean, if they
and
all
it, so at the top of the
like
poster,
that.
It says, "Why is everyone after George Segal's bird?" And then it says, "Because he's Sam Spade Jr. and his falcon's worth a fortune." And it has a little logo, the Black Bird. It's a falcon funny movie. Like, what the? This is a sequel to The Maltese Falcon, mother effers. Like, what are you doing?
it's so weird, the poster for this movie, in that you would think, trying to cash in on the success of,
it might say Maltese Falcon on it,
right? And it's like, you get George Segal's name bigger than you get Maltese Falcon. Like,
oh yeah, the title,
yeah, his name
is
in the tagline.
It's the actor's name. It's not, they're advertising the actor, and no, Tom, it's a Falcon funny movie. What the Falcon does that even mean?
I think they were trying to play on the F word. Like, it's Falcon funny.
Well, I know, like, but it's like, come on. It's a sequel to the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
It's sad. So, you know, but the
it's pretty bad.
So the whole thing starts off with, you know, like this hard, like the intro, you think it can work, right? He's walking down the streets of San Francisco.
The best part of this entire movie is the recreation of the original opening credits from the Maltese Falcon.
Right.
Like when it just is that static shot of the bird, and I'm like, oh, they got the same font. I'm like, oh, I like this.
The same color scheme.
And then the movie starts and no.
But it starts off and you think, okay, the guy, hard-boiled detective, is walking down the street, or, you know, he's like, you know, I'm Sam Spade, but Sam Spade Jr., this is my old man, whatever. You're setting it up like, okay, this could be a more modern noir. And then it becomes a racist movie.
The first joke where he's walking up on a dead body, and the guy's like, oh, the last thing he said, they immediately think it's Sam Spade Jr. that killed this guy. I guess,
yeah.
Because the guy's like, oh, he said it's big and black and as long as your arm. He's like, well, that rules me out.
But before that, when he's walking down the street, he walks past a bunch of black guys, and they're all like, there goes there. It's, they start doing all the Spade jokes,
and they like, and they do this.
There is a lot,
and they keep going back to this joke. I'm like,
That is the most frequent joke in this movie, is that his last name is Spade and he's not black. Like, how overtly racist is that?
Yeah,
I don't think it's overtly racist. I think it's just,
do you know I what mean, overtly racist?
Yeah, overtly.
Is?
Yeah,
so, I do, yes, but I also think like it's just. It's insane to me that they quadruple down on that joke. And I'm like, was this on TV or was this to theaters?
This was to theaters. This is a theatrically released film.
Ooh, buddy.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing. They don't try to hide it. Like, this is like mid-70s, just, you know, racist, just racism. Jokes are funny. Ha ha. It's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, there was this period in the 70s where it was like, if there was some sort of like trying to, I don't know, like reclaim it or put it on Front Street that would somehow make it okay. And like the, you know, they had the jokes coming from the black guy. So like somehow that made it all right, even though we know the joke was written by a white guy.
Right. They're like, there goes Sam Spade. Oh, he doesn't look black to me.
Yeah, like part of the reason Blazing Saddles works, you know, is because, you know, it's co-written by Richard Pryor. And so, you know, even if Richard Pryor didn't write this specific joke, he was in the room and that he, you know, there's at least a black comedy writer who is signing off on it. Presumably.
At least to pass on the script, you know,
right,
that he was,
you know,
a part of it. Absolutely. But these jokes are not, first of all, they're horrible. But second of all, they're, the script as a whole is not anywhere near the level of if you're trying to make a commentary or a satire on this type of stuff. Like, it's not smart or clever. It's just straight up bad. These are just racist jokes.
This feels like a parody.
That's what I'm saying. The comedy in this movie, the reason why I said satire as opposed to comedy is because when you hold a stretcher up and the guy falls through the stretcher, when you let the car go and it rolls down the street, and then later on in the movie it's still rolling down the street, that's straight out of something like police, like Naked Gun, Airplane.
Yeah.
Those are satire jokes in a movie that isn't a quote-unquote satire. So that's why it doesn't – the tone of the movie is supposed to be comedy, but then they do things that are you know what I mean? Like, not believable. They're not realistic.
They're more cartoony.
Yes, which plays perfect in a satire.
Right, because they're like, the movie will get on a little period of time where it kind of starts to work, and then they'll do something like that. It's like they'll just put in a gag for the sake of a gag, and in a movie like Airplane, and this movie predates, you know, the Zsasz movies, you know, but in movies like that, the whole point is that there is no reality, and it's just a gag a minute, if not more. And that's what you're there for. So of course you're just going to keep throwing things at the wall. But this movie, like, I really feel like this movie's pretty well plotted out. Like it's got a fairly decent mystery attached to it, and it's that's another reason why I feel like they got pretty deep into a pass on this movie trying to make a legitimate follow-up to the Maltese Falcon in tone, and then this was the only way they were going to get it made, you know? And I'll also say the 70s is a weird time because you for movies like this, because you know, baby boomers were kind of rediscovering film, these movies of this era, you know, and you started to see a lot of different movies in the 70s and early 80s that mined this territory, right? So you had,
you mean going back to older ones?
Like, or going back to the detective, hard-boiled detective type of story. I mean, you know, obviously you get a very good grounded in reality version of it with Chinatown, which is 74, you know? But before that, you had Woody Allen's Play It Again, Sam, which where he plays a film buff who's obsessed with Humphrey Bogart, and he's visited by the ghost, by kind of like his imaginary version of Humphrey Bogart, who gives him dating advice. And I know Woody Allen is problematic, but it's a very funny movie, and it's based on a Broadway play. He wrote the play, and the play debuted in 69. It was turned into a film that he starred in but did not direct in 72. But it's a really funny movie, especially if you're a film buff, because you get, you know, Humphrey Bogart giving dating advice. And that's actually, Kevin, you'll like this, that Humphrey Bogart giving advice, or imaginary Humphrey Bogart giving advice to Woody Allen in that movie. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
It's not ringing a bell, but I'm sure it will.
Does that device
oh,
sound
like True Romance?
It's where Quentin Tarantino got it from.
Elvis talking to Christian Slater. Yeah.
Yeah. He says flat out he lifted that idea from
Thank
Play
you.
It Again.
Oh, that's great. So, yeah. No, as soon as you said that, I'm like, oh, well, there you go. Love it. Yeah.
But anyway, so in the 70s, you got Robert Mitchum playing Philip Marlowe in a remake in Farewell My Lovely and a remake of The Big Sleep. And then you had a Robert Altman Philip Marlowe movie, The Long Goodbye. And then you had these like kind of zany parodies that written by Neil Simon that were actually produced by this guy, Ray Stark. So the Murder by Death and Cheap Detective, the two Peter Falk, like, you know, kind of precursors to Clue kind of movies. You know, and I mean, one, he's doing a Bogart parody flat out in one of them. And
Murder by Death, he is.
Yeah. So you had a lot of that stuff.
But I think that where this movie really fails, aside from the terrible script, is that it is a sequel to The Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
So on its own, if they were to make a straight up satire, and I love satire movies. I love those Zucker Abrams and all that stuff. We mentioned Loaded Weapon Part 1. I am a sucker for those movies. Absolutely love them. But I don't want the sequel to The Maltese Falcon to be that.
Absolutely.
They cashed in on the name, but they did something terrible with it. And then to add insult to injury, they didn't make a satire. They made a comedy with random satire gags in it. So clearly, I'm with Tom. It looks like the movie was written as a sequel. They couldn't get it made. Then they're like, well, we can do a zany comedy. Then they're like, or we can do a comedy. And they're like, oh, this isn't funny enough. Let's put gags in it. And it just turned into this monster where it is this Frankenstein's monster of different elements, noir, comedy, satire, and it ultimately doesn't serve its predecessor properly. It's only tarnishing the good name of the Maltese Falcon, and they should have just left that the property alone if they were going to do something like this.
Yeah, I do wonder if this somehow inspired those other movies, because if you look at it, this comes out in 75, and then in 76 Ray Stark produces Murder by Death, and then in 78 they do The Cheap Detective. And so it really makes you wonder if he saw this and was like, like, there's something here.
He
we
was
just
on
didn't,
to something. Yeah.
Right. We just didn't do it right.
We didn't do it right. And which is,
so,
you know,
what if we had Neil Simon write it instead?
Right. So this one starts off. You get your introduction. Sam Spade Sr. has died and Jr. has inherited the detective agency. You know, they keep harkening back, like, with all the black jokes. And then he's like, you know, I'm carrying on my father's legacy of serving minorities. Like, when was that?
When was that ever a thing?
I know, like, there's not there's not one black person in the Maltese.
No, and so like, put it in there, like, it's like, oh yeah, that good old. I remember Humphrey Bogart serving minorities, like the white woman he helps and the white guy
the one black character in the Maltese Falcon was the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah,
like that was it. There are
touche.
There are no other black characters in that movie.
But things ramp up when the fat man has died outside of his office.
It's not the fat man.
It's not.
His name was Casper.
Well, it's Gutman, right?
It is Gutman, but they call him Casper Gutman. And I don't think that
did we get a first name?
Maybe we didn't. Maybe we didn't get a first name in the first movie.
Oh, I don't. I thought it was, but maybe.
So for a second, I thought we were getting a.
I mean, who else would be after? I mean, like I figured that's the connective.
I thought we were getting a Sting 2 situation where it's like.
I hear you, but I think that they're setting up the connective tissue as far as characters, because of course Junior doesn't know what the Maltese Falcon is, but then you've got Gutman, who is
He's Casper Gutman. I just looked it up. He's Casper. Okay.
The problem, the confusion Joe's running into is the original movie, they spell it with a K, and in the new movie, they spell it with a C.
Ah.
But it's still Casper, though. So
I think that's just laziness.
I think that was just a stupid mistake.
They didn't have IMDb back then.
I thought we were doing this thing, too, where it's like, yeah, these are kind of the same characters, but not really the same characters.
Just a bad movie. But so that's the connection where Casper Gutman is found outside, and no one in the current day knows what's going on with this bird. But his last thing that he says is that it's black and as long as your arm. So we get more black jokes here.
Which, okay, that joke made me laugh. Because, like, just his reaction was like, well, I'm out. Like, I thought that, like, his reaction to what the guy said I thought was funny.
Because George Segal's funny. I mean,
George Segal is funny.
And especially if you know his current work, it's like, you know he's a funny guy, so it's hard not to apply your likability to the actor, but man.
Yeah, he's got the comedic timing. Like, the timing is there, and the delivery is there, and the way he's playing this character makes sense, but it's just... He is not. He's the Henry Cavill of the Maltese Falcon sequel, where he's just not. He's not given anything decent to do, and he's doing the best that he can. Like let's put that out there now. He's doing the best that he can with what he's got, but he ain't got much.
And he goes up to his office, and it's filled with minorities because we know his father was known for that. So
not just minorities, but also a trans person.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Like when they get to that character, I'm like, what are we doing? In this whole scene.
In 1975, I guess they thought that was a funny gag to have a huge black guy dressed in drag.
And then that's never played up again.
It's a gag.
Like, Effie walks into him, and I was like, oh, he's down there looking for something.
No. No.
Not at all. It's a one-and-done joke.
It's like they punched up a movie that already shouldn't have been a comedy with gags. Like,
Yeah, right. He... is approached by the who's the guy that's the cab driver in Escape from New York? Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, yeah.
By not Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah.
And who I assume works for Gutman, right?
I believe so. I believe.
Or does he work for the other guy?
I took it as that he was hired. Well, he was hired. He doesn't know who hired him, but he was hired to make sure that the Maltese Falcon is sold to the old guy in the cape.
Right. Okay.
But he doesn't know who hired him.
This actor, the not Ernest Borgnine, if anybody knows him, he's probably best known as he was the chauffeur on the Robert Wagner TV show Heart to Heart.
Oh.
He played Max on Heart to Heart. There but I will also say,
Dan.
This guy is a GD legend. He was a very successful character actor, and but he's also politically a communist, and he was blacklisted in Hollywood and didn't work for a major film studio for like 20 years. And the fact that he's working at all is says a lot.
But I guess you take what you can get at this point.
But, well, he's also a character actor, so that's kind of part and parcel with taking what you can get. But his name's Lionel Stander, and, like, for real, go read his Wikipedia page, because for a character actor, it goes on, and it's all about what he had to contend with. And he basically, like, sat in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee and was like, yeah, you can go F yourself. Like, he took no amount of grief from them, did not care. He's like, not. I mean, he sat there, and, like, they have some quotes from him on his Wikipedia page, and, like, he sits there and just flat out insults them while he's testifying. It's like,
that's so good.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's like ballsy. Yeah.
Well, he has 133 credits on IMDb, and he was the voice of Cup in Transformers the movie, so he is a legend.
Oh, really? Yeah, you win. That's it.
Cup is, I believe, Cup is the old robot that's like, yes, when Daniel and Bumblebee stumble upon the, you know, the old robot. That's Cup. So, yeah.
Yes, you're right. His name is Gordon Immerman, and he kind of becomes Sam Spade Jr.'s de facto partner.
He's like his apprentice. Though... Like he was hired to look after him and make sure the bird goes to the old guy that wants it. But then he like wants to become part of the agency.
His partner. I love the line where he's like, "Who hired you? I don't know. What are you looking for? I have no idea." It's like, "Well, you're off to a great start." Yeah.
I do think he's the best part of this movie.
Yeah, he's a great. Let me up kind of guy where he drops in a little comic relief.
Like he's so good that he makes the terrible script actually watchable during his scenes.
Yeah, he's like, "I'll be your heavy," and Sam Spade's like, "No, no, I don't want any of that." So
the old
this
guy,
femme fatale, right?
Well, the old guy comes in and he says, "I want this Falcon," and he gives him, what does he give him, $100 for his time or $50 for his time,
something
or
like
something?
That, yeah, or $200.
And so he's like, "I'll give you this money just to listen to me." And he says, "There's this bird, and it's I really want it, and it wouldn't be of any like he's downplaying it. It wouldn't be of any use to anybody. It was just a replica, but we want to cast another replica based on it." Blah 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 blah. And then Sam Spade Jr. The one thing I do like about the character is that the traits, aside from the ones that were fake and made up for this movie, it carry over is like how he'll do anything for money. So where he's like, "Yeah, I'll listen to you for $50. And then he's like, "Okay, I'll go look for this Falcon through my dad's old stuff for 25. And the guy's like, "I just paid you 50. And he's like, "Yeah, that was to listen to you, to give you my undivided attention, 25 to look through the old man's stuff." So
he's like, "Ugh."
Carries on that tradition. And that's a character trait where Sam Spade was always like, "Yeah, you know, how about 100? How about a 200? You know, always trying to like bilk them for a little bit more money and or milk them, really, but he wasn't really bilking anyone.
I also think it's funny throughout this movie as they offer him money for the bird. Yeah. Like the dollar figures are less than they were offering in the 40s.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's really weird.
I'll give
how
you
they,
$25.
Yeah.
In 1975, it's like, no.
So he finds this thing.
No, thank you.
And it's, I mean, the secretary had it stashed away, right?
Right. So somehow Sam Sr. got this replica back from the trial, I guess.
He always had it.
Didn't he give it to the cops? Did he give it to the cops at the end of the movie?
He was holding it. I don't believe he ever gave it up.
Oh, I guess you're right, because the cop does say, "What is that?
The stuff dreams are made of."
Right.
So what I thought was interesting rewatching the first one again was at the end you thought that he would have turned it in over evidence or whatever, but no, he holds on to it. I specifically remembered that. And thought, that's really strange that it's not, okay.
So we talked about in the first one how kind, not convoluted, but like there's a lot of this person's working for this person's here.
Intricate?
Yeah, intricate, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the same way, but so poorly done that when we get to the femme fatale.
Oh, God. She's working for a Nazi dwarf.
Yeah.
And he's working with the Hawaiians.
When
what
they
is
get
happening?
To when they get to the Nazi dwarf, and I was like, yeah. Let's why not?
What on earth? Like, I could not believe the places this movie went, I guess, for laughs. Like, they're like, what's the funniest thing that we could do? Okay, let's put a dwarf in Nazi uniform. Like,
Nazi regalia.
God. It's so...
like, we're not racist enough, but now we're going to throw a Nazi dwarf in
there. I think it goes back to the trans thing, which is like, it was just, to them, it was like, isn't it really funny? Ha ha ha, a little person. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest form of comedy because there's nothing smart about it. There's nothing clever. It is a gag, and in a better movie, gags work, but in this movie that isn't trying to say anything, it's not technically a satire.
No.
These gags are just like, what are you doing? It's cheap comedy, cheap laughs.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. Like, I will say it made me pop only because I was like, what is happening? Like when the reveal happens, it's not a laugh because it's funny. It's a laugh out of like, what is happening? Like,
right.
I cannot believe this is happening right now.
So this actor, so though, just real quick, this actor who plays the Nazi, he plays.
If you're going to tell me he was an Oompa Loompa,
he was an Ewok. And he was a penguin in Batman Returns.
And he also played Cousin It.
Oh, wow.
He played Cousin It on the Addams Family.
Yeah, if you see the guy's headshot, you know this actor. He was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And he wasn't from the Lollipop Guild?
I don't think so. But you didn't recognize him as Cousin It because his hair was grown out back then.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right.
And he for sure wasn't in Wizard of Oz because he would have been 2 years old when it came out.
Oh, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he pawns the bird to protect it.
Right. For $12.
$14.99.
Well, that's what he comes back and has to pay for it. Oh, no, you're right. Because he has to pay
$14.99. It's $17. Yeah,
yeah, right. Right.
I specifically remember the number because I'm like, why would you get $14.99? Like, I didn't know he was protecting it. I thought he was just like, yeah, these people are full of it. Give me $15. I'm like, what are you doing? But I mean, to their credit, he was putting it somewhere like they're not going to know that he pawned it. So it was pretty clever.
Yeah, it's a good move. Like,
he figures out what's going on, right?
Yeah. So he's approached by this femme fatale
who has never acted a day.
Oh my god, she is so bad.
There are two moments in this movie when he gets to the gal with the that he pushes down the elevator shaft.
Her.
Yeah.
I could not.
No.
I,
oh, what? Okay. Go ahead. I was talking about the other gal that at the. No, those are two different gals.
Oh, I thought the first one he meets is.
So there's the gal in the elevator, the blonde at the elevator shaft, and then you get to the Russian gal later.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about the one in the elevator. Sorry, I thought.
She was atrocious.
Her level of quote-unquote acting, like, that is someone's girlfriend, mistress, daughter. Like, I'm telling you what.
That was jaw-droppingly bad, her performance.
She was banging someone because she couldn't act herself out of a paper bag.
Yeah. I was going back and watching some of the special features on Superman the movie, and they have a lot of screen tests of actors who tried out for the role. And Donner was like, we couldn't find anybody. Like, it got to the point where, like, I auditioned my wife's dentist. And there's a whole, like, like 3 minute scene of him, this guy who's the dentist. It's like, wow.
I just have a feeling this is someone pretty that wanted to get into the movies.
Yeah.
I mean,
she got into a movie.
She is horrible. Like, she does have some TV credits. I believe her name is Connie Kresge. The decoy girl is how she's credited. I have to think that's her.
Yeah.
Like, it was awful. It's the worst acting in this movie, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, that's a pretty high bar for this movie.
Sorry, back to the Russian, Anna Kemedov.
Yes. Yes, so she also enlists this. So it's basically the same premise where he's getting drafted or enlisted, hired by like a bunch of different people to find this one thing.
But the running gag is that she drugs him so she doesn't have to have sex with him and then moves him into bed.
Doesn't have to sleep with him.
So
yeah, right,
they do
right,
the
right.
gag twice where it's like at nighttime she keeps drugging him and he wakes up and she's like putting his arm over her and like positioning it. Yeah. How was your night?
Was it? I like that first one where she's like, was it good for you? And he's like, no. I mean, it was fine, I guess. And it's she's like, I'm new at this. I don't know. And he's like, no, it's fine.
It's
fine.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah.
So this,
so she that, knows, the like, she knows what's going on, though. So she's our, like, she's the person that, like, tells him, like, you're in danger. The Hawaiians are going to come after you, and they're going to try to steal this thing. Like, this thing's worth more than anyone's letting on. So she's the person in the know that gives him all this info. And we later on find out that she's working with the Nazi guy. So, but she just plays it up as, like, this mysterious person that, that serves him all this information.
And he, and of course, Sam is digging on her, and I do like, so he's working. So while all of this is going on, he's also being chased down by a bunch of Hawaiians.
Yeah.
Like this Hawaiian guy. Sure. Okay. Why not?
I've never seen a Hawaiian gang in a movie before.
No. And you never, no.
And never the closest again. We like, got, it's not a thing.
The closest we got was the Samoan family and Hobbs and Shaw.
Don't you insult like, the Samoan family.
Yeah, I won't. I will never do that. They're tough individuals.
Yeah.
He gets attacked by this by the
oh,
Hawaiian.
Before she meets him, the reason he goes to the hotel is because the guy in the elevator that they have a really weird back and forth gives him a message to go meet this dude at the hotel. And this, like, third party, here's a new character, he's like, I will give you $1,500 for the Falcon, and the old guy with the cape was only going to give him like $350 that he agreed to over the phone. So now he's got people.
Well, it's Wilmer, this guy that he sees. This is Wilmer from the first movie,
so he knows what it is, and that's why he's like, I'll give you $1,500 for the Falcon,
right?
And that's when the girl comes along and is like, hey, you're in danger, this is, don't take this, this thing's worth millions.
And then we just forget about Wilmer. Poor Wilmer never gets any credit at all.
It's like, just a kinda cameo.
He dips out at the end of the first one, then he shows up back here. I want to know what happened to Wilmer between the time where he bounced and to now. And give me that movie.
That's the third movie. Look what happens to Wilmer.
Wilmer's story.
Yeah.
So he meets, and then of course this woman is living in the basement of a church. I guess.
She's like a philanthropist, and she's like, I want you to sell the Falcon and give the money to orphans.
And he was like, okay.
It's so weird.
Sure,
it's like,
why
okay.
not? Whatever.
And then she drugs him. He wakes up in the morning. He's like, I got to stop drinking.
Yeah, which I thought was a good line. Like, I liked that line, given, you know, because he has no clue what's happening.
This movie, so the next morning when he goes out to walk around the city, this movie is a literal garbage fire.
You have to believe that was on purpose, right?
Like, they knew they were making a garbage fire.
At first I thought the accident that happens in the background of this exact, like, the scene, like, right before this, there's a car accident in
was
the background
just happening.
And I was like, that's real. Like, they just didn't cut, like, just left that car accident in, and then the dumpster catches on fire, and I was like, that's a little long.
I just had that. That was so fitting that this movie's a literal garbage fire. That's in my notes.
So he meets, this is where he goes back to the office, and the Hawaiian gang is there, and they jump him. And this is where we're introduced to the small person Nazi.
Litvak. Played, the actor is Felix Silla.
Still alive, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's got a website. You can buy an autographed picture if you want.
Nice.
Maybe I will.
I'll buy one from this movie. Do you think he'll do that?
Like, for real, we need to find like a still and hang it on the walls in the studio whenever we're allowed to go back into the studio, for Christ's sake. So basically this movie, this is where it breaks down. Like, it's been breaking down the entire time, but this is where it really breaks down.
Oh, go on. A meme of Gene Wilder. Go on.
Yeah. So they go to the hotel. They find the guy in the cape and the hat, and he's dead in his room, but there's no explanation as to why. And this is where they find another clue. They find something.
Well,
I
think this is out of order, but when he's been captured by the Nazi, that's when Emmerman saves him in the wetsuit and all that, right?
Oh my God, it's so great. That was funny. I liked him in the wetsuit. This was ridiculous.
Jump forward. So Litvak has him captured because the Hawaiians took them to him. He does his whole crazy Nazi German thing. And then is the girl there and she speaks German? Is that the same part?
They show up at, like, he... So he does have flashes of being a good detective. So he takes, like, he finds that rolled up piece of paper and he takes that to, like, the gal that can decipher it.
Mm-hmm.
And they figure out that, like, they were, when Gutman was dying, the fat man,
yeah,
he wasn't describing it as it's black and as long as your arm. He was describing like the height and weight of this thing. So now the theory is that this replica that they think is a fake of the Maltese Falcon is actually the real Falcon,
which is absolutely ludicrous.
It is absolutely ludicrous.
You're telling me that Casper Gutman, the fat man who's been searching for this thing, went all around the world, found it, did not know how to determine it was the real thing, and it's the real thing. That is absurd to base a movie on this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, no. I mean, we've already been out, but no.
Right. This, I was getting some Uncut Gem vibes right here, only because he has to go to like each individual person and say, I'll get it for you. Then he has to go back to the pawn shop and pay the pawn shop an extra $2.
Yeah, that's just like, because the VIG, right?
Right. Well, he's just like, you want it back? Oh, you give me $2 more.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's no consistency in payments for anything.
No.
Like, his old man's making more money in the first movie, and it's 30 years ago.
Well, and I think they're really trying to hammer home through the ridiculousness of the fees. It's like a dying business. He acts like, oh, I've inherited this detective agency, this failing business, and I've got to do whatever I can just to pay the bills. It's like, dude, why? Just quit.
Why?
Why are you?
Yeah. What? You don't want to be a detective anyway.
He doesn't. Like, it's crazy.
He hates everything about it.
But, you know, he enlists the help of some museum historian or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, that gal, that she's like a translator. Yeah. Like, she can translate other languages.
So whatever, it's not even important. But
not
so
important,
so he
all
gets rescued from the Nazi ship.
Yes.
So, Immerman in the wetsuit, which is just hilarious. This big guy walking around like stealthily,
his gut hanging out, like, yeah, not hanging out, but like, and a wetsuit isn't flattering.
And he rescues Sam by punching him into the ocean.
Right.
He literally saves him. He's in his underwear and he's like, I've got a good thing going on here. For whatever reason, he like wants to stay there.
Right.
And then Immerman punches him, like,
and just carries him over his shoulder.
It's, yeah,
throw, you know,
no, he,
right,
punches him into the water though.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Like, and they're riding like a bat cycle and he's just got like a blanket on while they're riding back. Yeah. So they get back into, he gets the Falcon back. He gets downstairs to this church and he's talking to everybody. The Nazis break in. The Nazis / Hawaiian gang break in. There's a big fight. The Nazi makes a comment.
Remember when he ends up in jail with all the black guys?
Yeah, that was another really problematic scene.
Oh, yeah.
He walks away from the elevator because that girl that tried to kill him and attack him falls through the elevator, and they find her, and they're like, oh, yeah, we don't need to report this to the police. We'll be fine.
Right.
And then they cut to him in jail.
Yes. It's like, well, all right.
Yeah. Anyway, but like, he goes through and they try to give him something to do as a detective, and before the bad guys show up, like, he's like using a scale, like the scales of justice, like that type,
because it
scale
should weigh a certain amount and it doesn't.
And he's like weighing all this stuff, and you know, like, he's like, oh, the length and the weight, and he removes something and he's like, oh, but the coating would weigh extra and blah blah.
It's
blah.
Very lame.
No.
Very lame.
But I think it's also more proof that this was at some point a more serious movie, because you wouldn't,
sure,
even
could have been. It could have been.
You wouldn't have even write a scene like that for the kind of movie they ended up making.
No, like, you're like, who cares? Like, you're not being clever in this movie.
Right.
Like,
but
they bust through.
The small Nazi makes a comment about Anna's boobs.
Oh my god. Oh, wait. I will give you the quote.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say what he said, but
he shows up, the Nazi dwarf shows up, and he's at the top of the staircase and he's speaking German, and Sam's like, "What?" And
then
the Russian lady
starts
speaking German, and he goes, "Is there another woman on earth who possesses the perfect blend of brilliant mind and big tits?"
Yeah, that's right.
What are we doing here?
And then I'm not going to lie. There was a moment where she was wearing a slip and I was like, "Oh man." All right.
Oh, yeah.
But
so he picks up the Falcon and starts dancing.
Yes.
He dances.
And then has
a
massive heart attack.
He dances on the table. He dances on an ottoman. He's
that,
like, doing a shuffle.
That dude could move.
But what the...
I don't know.
What the hell are we... He looked like he was in something like Wizard of Oz as a munchkin. Like, what are we doing here?
So he dies. He has a heart attack because he's too excited. And Anna wraps him up in a rug. They wrap up the Falcon in a rug, and Anna acts. They go back to the office. They unwrap. They're super excited because
they
realize
they count on Immerman to bring the Falcon.
Right. And they realize, like, at one point he's like, oh, I was right, for whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the Falcon is real. Like, this Maltese Falcon is real. So they go to unwrap this thing real quick, and out drops the Nazi. And they're like, oh,
wrap
no!
Wrong one.
Because they threw the other one into the drink.
Right. So now the Falcon is at the bottom of the ocean, like the heart of the ocean.
And they have to, and then he puts on a giant, like, Men of Honor diving suit,
like Jacques
Cousteau. Like, where are you going? Where are you going? That you need a suit this big? He goes down. He being Sam Jr. goes down in the water. He picks
almost
it up,
has it,
and then he gets attacked by a shark.
And a shark, picks up the Falcon
and
floats away.
It.
The end.
Yeah. Well, you also get you also get the musical moment of not the theme from Jaws.
Right.
Which,
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Which is also, like, is really funny because Jaws had come out like 6 months prior. So you know that they had to go and, like, re-edit that scene so they could insert the music cue for the shark.
Right. Oh, sure.
Because I Googled it because I was like, wait, when did this come out? And it was, and Jaws came out in the summer and this came out in December.
That's hilarious.
This has to be one of the worst movie endings of all time.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
The gag of, like, oh, we've got it, and a shark takes it away. Yeah. And they play this, like, zany music, like, bom, 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 we've been foiled.
Yeah.
They play the sound that, like, when you do press your luck and you get a whammy.
Right. Womp,
yeah.
Womp. Yeah. Wow.
Sad trombone.
Yeah, that's so, right. That's right.
Like,
man, this was terrible.
This was awful, and I yes, it was better than Look What Happened to Rosemary's Baby. I'll give you that. But that's a very
low bar.
Small. Yeah, that's a very low bar set. This is an insult and a travesty compared to the classic film, which is The Maltese Falcon, one of the great films and one of the archetypes for noirs. And this was awful.
It's shocking that it's shocking that they let it get made, especially because Ray Stark, the producer, was like really good friends with John Huston. He produced 5 of his films, and you would think that cooler heads would have prevailed. But,
well, John Huston's name is nowhere on this movie.
No,
let's just put it that way.
Nowhere should it be.
There's a reason.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon at Patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. Next week, we will continue our dive into misbegotten sequels and the films
next week is Tenet
and the films that spawned them. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Wang reveals there was no murder.
You have something which belongs to me.
Oh really? What could that be?
The Blackbird.
How'd it get to be yours all of a sudden?
It is mine because I deserve it. Mine because I have killed for it and will kill again for it. It is mine because I have the means, the determination, and most of all, the power to have it. It is mine because I want it.
Look, if it's yours, what do you need with me?
Because I don't have it. You do.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.